So we continue with the next session. We will have three talks. The first by Jens Dübel, talking about optogenetics. The second one by Valentina Emiliani. She will talk about her devices to stimulate neurons. And then finally by Riad Ben-Osman, who will talk about neuromorphic vision and cameras.
Thank you, Wotan, for the introduction. And first of all, also let me thank to José Sahel for giving me the opportunity to talk about our vision restoration approach based on optogenetics, and we are using microbial opsins. And my focus will be the circuit function, how well we can restore the circuit function in a diseased retina with optogenetics. So what you see is here that photoreceptors transform the light stimulus into an electrical signal. And in my laboratory, we are using the patch clamp technique to record these responses. And now I want to show you the setup we are using. It is a custom-made setup. And let me also say that there are a lot of so the signal processing in the retina is computed by horizontal cells, amacrine cells, and I just want to mention two key features, for example, antagonistic centers around receptor fields or direction selectivity. Later on, I'll come back to these key features because we always try to find out how well we can restore the retinal circuit function. So let me show you the custom-made two-photon setup we are using in my laboratory. So what we do is we put a retinal X-bond here into the dish, and we can keep it alive for a couple of hours, up to 6 hours. And then we can play a light stimulus with a projector, a movie. And while we play this movie to the retina, we can do the recording with a patch clamp electrode from different cell types. And in addition, we can do the imaging with a two-photon laser, and there we can do, for example, calcium imaging or chloride imaging. So the readout is an electrophysiological readout, but also an optical readout. And the key advantage of the two-photon imaging in the retina is that we are using invisible light, so the retina cannot see the light we use here from the two-photon laser because it's invisible infrared light. And so we have two laser lines here where we can stimulate other, for example, GFP or calcium indicators. And so on top of that, we have another setup where we have, instead of a patch clamp rig, a multi-electrode recording. And this is done in collaboration with Olivier Mar and Serge Picot. And we also have in this setup, instead of the scanning mirrors, what we call a liquid crystal modulator. So what we can do is we can play a patterned light stimulus, not only with a projector, but also with a two-photon laser. So in other words, what we do is in the one-photon mode with a normal projector, what you have here in this room, we can also do now with a two-photon laser. And this enables to for example, to project spots here at micron resolution. This is here a multi-electrode tagged with a fluorophore, just to illustrate how we can use multiple spots of stimulation at different space. So we can do holographic stimulation at different locations. And Valentina Emiliani, she pioneered the technique, and in the talk after my talk, you will hear in much more detail about the holographic stimulation technique. Now let me talk about the diseased retina quickly. In retinitis pigmentosa, if you lose your light-sensitive outer segments, what we have in many conditions, and then we cannot record any light responses anymore. Here, this is shown in a as a cartoon, but this is what we observe in a blind mouse retina. But despite the loss of sensitivity, there are some patients who have remaining cones, and the question was, can these dormant cells be reactivated? I go through here quickly, it's published data. So the idea was to introduce a chloride pump, a hyperpolarizing pump, so negatively charged ions are pumped into the cell, mimicking the response of a healthy photoreceptor. So this was a tool, a perfect tool to mimic the natural light response. It was introduced in blind mice by using an adeno-associated virus. Here you see the halorhodopsin under control of a cone-specific promoter. And after 2 weeks of incubation, you see here a very robust expression here in the photoreceptors and in the output synapses. So this experiment has been done by Volker Buskamp in Botan-Roskes laboratory. And then we used a patch clamp recording to see if it's really functional. And here you see the action spectrum measured from a patched photoreceptor here peaking at the wavelengths typical for the halorhodopsin. And it was also transmitted, then here you see a light stimulus, and it's transmitted to the output neurons, the ganglion cells. So this shows an off-ganglion cell here, and we also wanted to see, does it work in the on and in the off cells? So this shows that we have responses from the on, from the off cells, and from bistratified cells, the on-off responses. And what about more sophisticated circuit function like antagonistic centers around receptor fields or direction selectivity? So this is a famous recording from Stephen Kufler from the 50s where you see an on center off surround cell. And we wanted to know, can this be restored by targeting these cones? And this is what you see here. This is a voltage clamp recording from a ganglion cell. Here I applied a center stimulus, he got a pure on response, and then here, if you apply the stimulus to the periphery, the center response is completely abolished, showing that this works very well. And here this shows the data from four cells. And we also tested for direction selectivity. This is the other example I mentioned. And here this is the example that we could back. Also these responses. So this inner retinal circuit function were restored. We observed it in the visual cortex and also at the behavioral level. So let me acknowledge the work of the team of Botan-Roske at that time. And there was also collaboration between the Vision Institute here in Paris and the FMI working on the human explant, which was pioneered here by Serge Picot. And now what can you do after complete loss of photoreceptors? Then the next target can be the bipolar cells. This has been pioneered by Lagalli et al. In Botan-Roske's laboratory with electroporation. We wanted to use an AAV, and we used an AAV that has been designed by Denise Talcara, especially to target the cells from the vitreous. And this had an mGluR6 promoter, so a promoter that is specific for the on bipolar cells. And here you see a two-photon image showing that we can target the rod bipolar cells here, a type 9 and a type 7 on cone bipolar cell. And so then we did recordings on the multi-electrode array. And we saw both on and off responses. So at the first glance here, you might be surprised that you see off responses because we targeted the on bipolar cells. And this can be explained by the retinal circuitry because we were putting the channel rhodopsin in the on cone bipolar cells, but also into the rod bipolar cells. And the key point here is that you have a sign-inverting synapse here, a glycinergic synapse, that flips the signal and it can induce an off response. So this is why we got both the on and the off responses. And it was also transmitted to the visual cortex and we got behavioral responses here in the mouse, and we published last year showing that we can restore the on and the off pathway by applying the virus from the vitreous, and at the same time, also Therese Cronin published a paper with a similar approach. So now, what about the third strategy? So targeting ganglion cells, if you have the bipolar cell layer highly disorganized, if they are starting to get compromised. So this has been shown by many groups. The first paper was by Bi et al. And the vast majority of the papers, they used blue light. And as we heard before, that a blue light has higher toxicity compared to red light. You see this here, and these are the safety thresholds. And we apply here to the European directive, so we made some calculations, and you can see that it makes a tremendous difference. We are talking about three orders of magnitudes. So this would be the threshold for red light stimulation, 590 nanometer, and here in this range, you would have the threshold with blue light. So it's very important to use a redshifted opsin. So what we used was the REACH-R, and this was a project of a student in my lab, Abhishek Sengupta. He injected a virus, an AAV, encoding the REACH-R subretinally. And this shows the fundus image after 2 weeks. And this is a two photon here, and you see nicely expression of the REACH-R in the membrane. And the patch clamp recordings here shows that you can stimulate up to 600 nanometer. So, and this shows the light intensity requirement compared to wild-type cones. REACH-R is in this range, but the key point is that we are below the safety threshold. So, and it was transmitted to the visual cortex. We got on responses as we expect from a direct targeting of the ganglion cells. And we wanted to know then in the next step, can we transfer it to a human retina? And we used the technique by Serge Picot that we can keep the retina in cell cultures up to 10, 12 days. And here Abhishek, he cut a piece from the very center, from the macular region, and then he put it onto a multi-electrode, and this shows the orientation here, the location of the multi-electrode and the yellow tint here, the macular region, the fovea is here, so he was cutting the retina in half through the fovea. And then the light stimulus showed here robust responses at 600 nanometer, and here these are the cells where we recorded light responses. And the interesting thing is, if you look at this dashed line here, so this is the borderline of the fovea, where we have the cones only to the parafovea. And here where the first ganglion cells were popping up here we had spontaneous spiking, and some cells, they had a strong spike response upon stimulation with red light. And this shows the action spectrum. And we can stimulate up to 600 nanometer in here from six recorded cells. And now here, this is the confocal flat mount of the human retina. And what you see here, these are the cells expressing the REACH-R fused to the M-citrine. And from the morphology and from the location, we know that these are midget ganglion cells. So this region here, the parafovea, very close to the fovea region, is overwhelmingly dominated by midget ganglion cells. And they have a very small dendritic, bushy dendritic field. Here you see this here. And here you see the bipolar cell region, and here the photoreceptor only region, because we have the three-dimensional structure, as you know, in the fovea, and this is the flat mount here. Now, coming back to the retinal circuitry, there's one important thing we have to keep in mind. If you're able to target these cells, you could, in principle, reactivate the midget circuit. So this has been discovered by Polyak in the 40s, that we have a private line that one ganglion cell is connected to one bipolar and one photoreceptor in the very center. And in principle, with an optogenetic approach, you can have a high resolution activation, a single cell resolution. So if you're able to stimulate one midget cell, you would mimic the input from one cone, theoretically. So, and the spacing on the retina is also very important. They are packed very densely, all the midget cells. And they have a spacing of 5 to 10 microns. And also the receptive fields are very small. So imagine you can, if you're able to distinguish two objects that are separated by 5 microns, that corresponds to 1 arc minute. This is the cone spacing. And if you have here this acuity, 1 log unit below, then you have a 10% visual acuity. So imagine when you're able to stimulate small receptive fields in this densely packed midget mosaic, you could end up with an acuity in this range. It doesn't mean that this is a vision that would be not distorted. It will be highly distorted because what you stimulate here would correspond to a cone that would sit somewhere 500 micron away. So the vision would be highly distorted. But in principle, you could reach high acuity levels. And this morning you heard that acuity is not all, but it could be one important aspect we are looking at. And this is why I think targeting this region is really very promising. And our work with the colleagues, with Denis Tarkara and others, they show that we are able to target a ring, a parafoveal ring, very close to the foveal slope. And so this is our hope, that we can stimulate these cells. And we would need, of course, a stimulation technique with a very high axial resolution, because there is also another problem. It's not that it's highly distorted because it's somewhere else located. It's also that the midget cells in the center are not in a two-dimensional space. They are stacked upon each other. So you would probably stimulate with a normal light stimulus, even if you have a high-resolution stimulus, a bunch of cells that are stacked above each other. So this is why it's very interesting to have this technique, like a digital holography, where you can increase the axial resolution already in one photon. I'm not talking about the two photons. So Valentina can tell you some tricks about it and how you can achieve this high resolution. And this will bring me then to the to some in vivo data from the macaque. So this here is a region imaged with the two photon. This is a two photon stack. And you can see the densely labeling here of the midget cells here. And this is an example of one cell here with a small dendritic field, and here the axon. So, and then Antoine, postdoc in my lab, he performed patch clamp recording from these cells here. And you see here the first cells coming up next to the fovea. So here you see there are no ganglion cells. This is the photoreceptor only reaching in here. These are the first cells coming up. And this shows the action spectrum. And we got at 10 to the 16th photons per square centimeter second. We got a very high signal to noise response here, very clean responses. So we can go down with the light intensity by 2 orders of magnitude. And this shows the temporal resolution of the crimson here. And you see that we can stimulate easily up to 30 hertz. It goes almost back to baseline, and up to 50 hertz is also possible. So imagine a normal cinema movie operates at a frame rate of 24 hertz. So concerning the temporal resolution, we can stimulate at high frequencies. And you heard from Ernst Bamberg this morning, there are even faster opsins, the fast crimson or the fast reach are, where we have some margin to extend. So, and let me summarize the different approaches. So this was the cone approach I was talking about at the beginning. We can, if we have the retinal circuitry in patients where we have remaining cones, not many, but if there are some, and we would be successful to target, in principle, we could restore the inner retinal circuitry. We showed that it's transmitted to the visual cortex, and we could induce behavioral responses. So the approach number two, the bipolar cell targeting, at least the on-off responses we could show, it was also in the visual cortex on the behavioral level. And here, I think we are most advanced here if you look in the translational perspective here in on the ganglion cell level, where we showed it on the in the mouse, in the human, as I showed you on the last slide, the functionality at least with the ReachR. The crimson here in the macaque. We also have very beautiful data from Catch. Due to the short time, I haven't shown it, but I'm happy to show afterwards. I have it here. So we got very good recordings with Catch, with ReachR and crimson. And here, the gap here is probably the most challenging part is targeting still the bipolar cells. And we could show the functionality here on the cone level. And at least the AAV efficacy, not the expression of the microbial itself. It's very challenging, the halorhodopsin expression. We can discuss this also. But just to give you a summary, so I think, as you know, there's an FDA approval in the US. So the first clinical trials have been started by RetroSense using a blue light-sensitive opsin targeted to the ganglion cell. So now here, the GenSight company working on the crimson, so we are probably expecting the next moves here in this area. So let me acknowledge all my team members. Elric Esposito, he was building the two photon setup with the multi and electrode array and the SLM in collaboration with Valentina Emiliani and Olivia Maher. And Serge Picot and Abhishek, he did the recordings and the project on the redshift ops in the ReachR. All the human data comes from him. And Antoine, he did the patch clamp recordings and the funding sources, of course. Thanks a lot for your attention.